Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. We've got an incredible show again today. Jennifer O'Rourke is the president, co-founder of Attest. If it sounds like I'm confused, it's because this was the smartest show I've had since Emerson Spartz from Dose Media was on the show and blew my brain away by having a conversation with himself while he was having a conversation with me and still texting other people. It was just blew my brains out. An easy way to get me to do that, of course, is to talk about blockchain. I think, personally speaking, without getting into the crypto stuff, just my natural instinct tells me that blockchain is about identity and that it's about being able to assign a person with one line that follows them digitally through their life. We talk about in the show with Jennifer, there's sort of like analog Jennifer and digital Jennifer. And the two need to link together and be able to be tracked and make sure that all contracts, her home, her degrees, her assets are all on the note, you know, a note. Each one is an individual note on her own individual blockchain that is her identity. If that sounds like a lot, then maybe this podcast isn't for you. But we deep dive so much that I invited my blockchain expert, Davis Marklin, who's the growth manager for Technori now. But he's also my entrepreneur in residence because he spent a lot of time on blockchain and can decode this conversation that I have no idea what's going on about. And so Jennifer will literally go through what Attest does. And it's, to me, it is an incredibly unique way of identifying individuals in a digital world. We use our social security and our birth certificate and everything else. And right now it's like a snapshot of it. And then it just passes around at a PDF and it's not trackable. And there's all kinds of problems. They figured out a way to sort of, like I said in the beginning, merge analog Scott with digital Scott. Very fascinating stuff. Very heady stuff. Jennifer, and just in case you're wondering, she's the former state of Illinois blockchain business liaison. She's worked as the head of development, global business development for CME Group. She knows a thing or two about the problems that she's trying to solve. So Jennifer, that was a fantastic conversation, which you will hear in about 2 minutes. But before we do that, I have to go to our startup inbox, which is now thankfully brought to you by ActiveCampaign. Go to activecampaign.com/technori, and you, the listener, can literally get your second month free using this sales pipeline. It's like HubSpot and Salesforce and other good stuff all mixed into one. I personally use it. And when I say your second month free, you're probably like, who the hell gives the second month? You can sign up for the first month for free using ActiveCampaign. No credit card needed. On board, they will literally help you migrate everything over. You can test it out, make sure it's what I told you it is, which it is. Then you can use this coupon, Koopy, to get your second month free. And then you are only paying for 10 months out of a year instead of 12 months out of the year. And if it is everything I said it is, which it is, you can use it even longer. So that's my little pitch on that. And if you want to wait around, you don't remember the link, you can subscribe at technori.com for the newsletter. And then at the bottom of the newsletter, you'll see a link to ActiveCampaign. You click that link and voila, you're set up for your second month free. So thank you very much for ActiveCampaign. Now let's punch it to the startup inbox. So the user's Jag959. I'm just going to hope it's not what I'm thinking and rather like a Jaguar, but whatever. He wants to build an app that homeowners and private vacant lot owners can set up an account that allows others to pay them to park on their property. This is called ParkX. We've had him on the show. It's incredible. He's raised a shit ton of cash and there's a reason for it. It's like Airbnb for parking. We've got our friend Spot Hero, Mark Lawrence, been on the show many times. Spot Hero was the first company to ever pitch on Technori stage. I don't know if you've noticed, but they're kind of a big deal. ParkX, so there's also ParkWiz, which is another thing, which is also great. ParkX actually is the Airbnb. So if you are one of those really, really cool people who live in Wrigley and you want to profit on your parking spot because you don't even have a car, I digress. You can put this on the ParkX app and the people who are coming to Wrigley to go to the Cubs game can actually pay you money to use a spot and you can charge whatever the hell you want. And or you could be in the inner city here, Loop area, and be able to make your spot available in garages for lengthy periods of time, month to month, etc. So before you go pouring all, not saying you shouldn't pursue this, but before you go pouring all of your money into this app, you want to know, how do I differentiate temporary parking company from others in the marketplace? ParkX.com. That's my recommendation. Download the app. Whew. I love when I get ideas that before I even get to the second sentence, I already know the company to send you in the direction of. Not that that's not my talent. That's the fact we've just had like 500 and whatever, 1,000 companies in here. And a lot of them are just so good and been in business. And ParkX is one of them. In fact, they're a Chicago Innovation Award winner. So With that said, I'm going to bring in another company who, if not, will very soon be a Chicago Innovation Award winner and a Technori alum, Jennifer O'Rourke, president and co-founder of Attest. You see how I have a problem with like understanding blockchain and understand, like, my job is to understand innovation and to help startups scale and to help large companies stay from getting toppled and do this show. But I can't even figure out how to do run my own board, let alone any of this. So I've brought, so just so you, in case you hear a foreign voice here, I've brought our, again, it's growth manager, but he's like, to me, it's like entrepreneur in residence times, whatever you want to call it, Davis Markland, who is my tech decoder and my interpreter, but he's also a very, very successful founder in his own right with blockchain and Euphrates, was named by a Wisconsin NO. We don't judge because it's Wisconsin, but we'll let it slide. Top 25 under 25. He was like number one on that list. I've mentored him for several years, so it's inexplicable how he's gotten to this point. And the lab you're hearing, Jennifer O'Rourke, is the president of Attest, and you are also the co-founder, of course. And I just, like, I don't even, there's no one place to start. Yeah. So I'm just going to go in and just say, tell us what Attest is, and then we're going to have a free-for-all from here if that's all good with you.
Love it.
Perfect. Okay. What is Attest?
So Attest is a digital identity company. And I'll just start by keeping it that simple. So we were looking to solve the problem that as the computing ability of ourselves as individuals and the way that we interact with online, especially through mechanisms like e-commerce, but then again, as organizations are moving through those same processes as well, we've watched the rate of digitalization just exponentially increase. What can't you do online right now is the question that I would ask. You can buy a plane ticket, you can enroll in courses, you can pay your bills. Well, there is one thing that's fundamental to the way in which we participate in all of these business processes, these services that you cannot initially do online, and that is you can't prove that you are who you say you are.
Yep.
To do that, you actually roll back into an analog process where we're using hard copies. Digital just does not exist natively digital. And I want to be really precise about that because, of course, we can take a picture. We can create a PDF of some of these analog documents, if you will, but they have not yet been digitalized natively by the issuing sources. And that's a big problem because then when you have this break between an organization that creates identity documents and they do so in an older antiquated format, but those identity documents are used fluently throughout all of these other processes and businesses that we interact with, you have to kind of bootstrap the way in which you digitalize them. And we've watched companies very successfully, and thankfully we've watched companies very successfully find workarounds to create PDFs, to do third-party verification, to open up a crypto account by taking a selfie with the app on your phone and sending that along with a picture of the identity document. Those workarounds have provided a bit of a bridge that's been helpful, but what we really need is natively digitalized identity documents that can be securely digitalized, securely transmitted, securely held, and securely received. And so that is the more detailed version of what it means for Attest to be a digital identity.
So the idea that when I was wanting to verify my Twitter or any other thing, I had to literally take a picture of my driver's license and upload it.
Yeah.
Would show that there might be a gap here.
Absolutely.
Just a little one.
Absolutely. And then you can extrapolate that problem by saying, how do we as individuals really feel that? Well, when I go on Twitter and I see that, you know, there are some very clear accounts that are created by bots that don't have that blue check mark.
They mostly follow Donald Trump.
True. And as you try and navigate the way in which we are interacting with other organizations and other individuals using that Twitter example, the blue check mark becomes a signal of trust. You expect the information not necessarily to be true or accurate that's coming out of that blue checkmark account, but at least you know that it can be tied back to an organization or an individual. And that in and of itself is very powerful because we don't really have that. Yeah. So creating the tools to expedite that process, whether it's for Twitter, whether it's for me to have digitally issued government documents that I can then use to pay my taxes, access government benefits, you know, interact with my employer, or just simply, you know, buy pants from a retail clothing company online, all of those become very helpful in the way that I interact with all of these other organizations. And when I say I am who I said I am,
yep,
they believe me.
So this, like, the number of applications that this actually touches on is I guess, infinite.
Yeah.
I look at the fact of, like, is it transnational? Is that the background check, like, superhero world? Like, they're able to, like, figure out who everybody is. That the right company? Am I thinking of the right company?
That sounds right to me.
I think that's right. Yeah. So we've had a bunch of people on the show, as well as throughout the years, who have been in, whether it's security or they run a company that requires, you know, very, you know, extensive background checking and things like that. And it always blows my mind how time intensive and expensive that process is, yeah, unnecessarily gotten to. And the number of companies who have folded, and nonprofits is like an innumerate number, who have folded because they did not do background checks or they did not do whatever, and there was a breach of either an employee or a member or a volunteer who was a predator or like some crazy thing. And I really think it's kind of, well, how do I put this? I look at, like, media. I always joke and make fun of our own media companies here, but, like, the idea that you're going to take the newspaper and turn it into a PDF and that's how we're going to distribute it, and we think that that's going to work, and people are like, oh, that's not a great idea. Those are the same people who decided that it's a great idea to take your actual physical identity and birth certificate and snap a photo of it and then just email it across the world where anyone could do it and no one could track what happened to it after you screenshotted it.
Yeah.
That is the world we live in. And it is such a, like, I don't know why it shouldn't be this big of a surprise, but it is. This is an incredible, what you guys are doing, I think, is an incredible thing that people maybe don't even realize is a thing. Yeah. And that is the new world going forward. You're all digital.
Yeah.
And you need to be, we need to be able to figure out who you are in real time and make sure that, and this will lead to the blockchain conversation where Davis will come in and explain everything you just said to me. But, like, we need to know that, like, okay, so stepping back for a second, I just made the comment about taking a picture of your birth certificate and passing it. I can tell sort of if the file was manipulated, or I can, like, maybe prove that, like, the original versus the not, but I can't really tell if someone has doctored with this. And the fear that people have digitally, like fingerprints or anything else, is that you can manipulate it digitally and no one will know. And so until we get to a position where you can securely create a digital footprint, whatever it is, mm-hmm, and then be able to track every iteration there forward from that so that it can all go back to original source, I think that literally might be a multi-billion dollar industry alone, just getting rid of the amount of stuff that we just throw in the trash can because we're pursuing this PDF world. How
Absolutely.
Off am I?
Yeah, no, you're spot on. So I think it's really interesting because you pull out a couple of concepts that I think would be interesting to drill into a little bit more. First of all, this idea of the semantic web. So being able to digitalize data in such a way that it can become searchable, that it can become associative, that it then in those associations can pull out nuanced pieces of it and confirm the origination, the authentication of those pieces. Essentially, I think that is really what's happening behind the curtain.
Yep.
And that's what's so powerful, because you no longer have to take an entire document, an entire contract at face value. You can get down to the pieces that make the most sense, and you can, again, securely transmit those pieces with the confidence of cryptography and digital signatures that are ticking in the background of that transmission that mathematically secure the information that's being shared in such a way that it begins to, not that it begins, but it secures in such a way that it cannot be tampered with.
Yep.
Now, the process of getting people culturally comfortable with that and that transition is something that we are very thoughtful about, and therefore we want to make sure that we're working with the right people and on the right projects so that it is clear that when you're sending this digital information across the web, it has the power of that issuing source behind it in, yep, such a way that the people who are receiving it, those relying parties, don't have the question, is this actually from the issuer that I need it to be from?
So before we get into the more technical and, like, how you do this, I will give the same piece of advice that I gave to a company that has nothing to do with what you do, but has a similar, it's not a problem, it's just a similar, like, let's say market fit circumstance. And that is that older generations, uncomfortable, don't use tech, you know, whatever. And the company, I'll just plug them because I love the company. I have their app, M1 Financial. It's an app that basically you can mirror portfolios of like people like Carl Icahn and invest just like they do. And it's obviously a lot less scale. but it's a cool app nonetheless. Well, we were talking, having a conversation over coffee, and he was talking about, Brian, the CEO, was talking about how they want to you know, attract everyone with money, right? You want to get them to invest in the app. The problem is the people who have the most money, who would put the most money in sort of a mutual fund style investment portfolio, are going to be people who are like 50 or 60 years old. And actually it's like 65, 70 years old. And you can pick things that are high risk and low risk, et cetera. He tells me this thing and he's like, we're trying to crack and spending time and money trying to figure out how to market that group. And I was like, this sounds really callous and I don't mean it to be, but it was just obvious to me. Those people aren't your people. The people who are your people are their kids who are, if they're lazy, they're waiting for them to croak so that they can get the money, and then they're going to invest it the only way they know how, which is through your app. Don't waste your money and time trying to chase after the people who will never adopt. Go after the people who are those people's siblings or kids who are already going to be adopted. And then when those other people kind of die away, you have the top of the food chain and the bottom.
Yeah.
And I think that's a play for you guys. It's like, you can't convince everybody, and this is a business that's going to take, like banks, 7 years of slow change and sort of incremental improvements until it gets to a point where it's like universally accepted throughout. Why not just adopt every single person going forward to be like, use digital signatures from here on out to protect yourself, and then by the time you scale 7 years from now, you've just got everybody.
Yeah.
So that was my two cents.
No, I think it's really interesting because at the end of the day, we look to initially partner with governments. Yep. Governments serve everyone.
Yeah.
And so we don't.
And they're so fun to work with. You know, you've been inside,
exactly,
so I don't have to.
Exactly. Yeah. No,
I'll take that shot.
As a ex-government employee myself. But governments have to serve all of the subsets of various communities. That means that governments are responsible for making sure that their services can be received by all of those different subsets that have a different education around technology and these tools and different access to these tools. And so what we try to do as almost a philosophical approach, because that is our vantage point, is partnering with these organizations that will have to interact with end users that may not be interested in actually participating in these technology solutions. And so we know that we need to make our solutions as flexible as possible. And we know that we need to allow for a variety of different entrance points and, you know, just a lot of flexibility as we deal with the government partners. And so we've built that in. So we've built that in terms of the way that we layer our technology on top of current business processes. We were talking earlier about how we're a company that is not trying to be a bull in a china shop. There are very effective ways that organizations provide their services and run their businesses. So, yep. For example, the DMV does distribute licenses.
My favorite place.
Exactly. Like, obviously, we all have special, you know, like warmth in our heart for the DMV. But as much as we can be frustrated, perhaps, with the customer service experience, we don't have a question that we're ever going to walk in and not get a license. Like, the DMV I will be able to get my form of ID. It might be cumbersome, it might be uncomfortable, but I will get it. So that service is delivered. And so what we're not trying to come in and say, you know, Department of Motor Vehicles, we're going to blow up your process, we're going to innovate all over it, and then we're going to throw some technology on top of it. We're going to recognize that your process works. We just want to use the technology to kind of sew in certain efficiencies so that we can start to work around those customer service experience and cost savings opportunities.
Just as a shout out to Jesse White, I just want to be clear that I actually have had nothing but good experiences with the customer service at the DMV. It is the humans that are standing in line like cattle around me that I have a problem with. Those are the people who walk in with no check, no credit card, no idea what their plate number is, no VIN number. Just like, this is like, I'm going to like bewitched and just, and anyway, I digress.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the technology here. And then I'm going to have Davis sort of tell me what she said. how does this work? I want to talk specifically around blockchain, because we obviously, you know, I have my own opinions about blockchain and the crypto. I'm not even going to get started on. Mm-hmm. But we brought Davis in to Technori because of his expertise and knowledge in blockchain. And I think that there's great applications, and I think there's a complete waste of time applications. And it's very unique to me when we have the opportunity to put someone on the show who can speak to how this can be used in a way that is actually beneficial mm-hmm. versus like, well, if I had to force a way to use this, this is what it would be because I need innovation R&D money.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little more.
Okay. So I'm going to start by taking a quick step back. So prior to launching a test early last year, my co-founder and I sat with the state of Illinois, and we were very fortunate in those roles that we had to be able to launch the state of Illinois' blockchain initiative. So that initiative allowed us to very deeply work with various technology providers in the market and understand not only what was out there from a vendor perspective, like, you know, what can we choose from? But to really understand in working with a variety of those providers, what are the technologies and the functionality that each different type of technology offers that makes sense for government. And when I say government, I'm speaking from that vantage point, but I do want to be clear that in many ways and in most ways, corporations function in similar ways as government. So it actually is, from a functional perspective, yeah, pretty easy to bucket them together in terms of their needs. So we had this incredible vantage point where we were able to deeply understand the market. And we actually had a proof of concept roadmap throughout 2017, where we were able to explore a variety of different blockchain use cases. So we looked at things ranging from land title registries, academic credentials, health provider registries, energy credit marketplaces, and then we started to touch upon identity with the digitalization of a birth certificate and exploring that particular use case. Our thesis was that there would be a particular type of technology, thus a particular type of blockchain or distributed ledger that would make sense, or, you know, their particular functionality would bespokely solve and fit nicely with that use case. So we expected to use Bitcoin for one, public Ethereum for another, a private implementation of Ethereum for another, and then digital identity blockchains, et cetera, et cetera. So we ended up exploring all of those options very deeply, and we came to a conclusion that broke our hypothesis. We found that actually identity is a horizontal layer. So if you think of those five use cases as vertical silos, if you will, what they need to do is they need to sit upon a horizontal layer of identity. And the reason why this is so important is because if you have different solutions, especially when it comes to being those solutions being held in government services, where I, as the citizen, I, as the end user, will interact with a majority of those use cases. I will want to purchase a home and have that registered with Cook County. I will want to be able to have a digital version of my academic credentials and pass that through to an employer. I may be an RN or a doctor, any other registered, profession, and need to register that with the state of Illinois. So I will have multiple touch points to all of those use cases. And if the data models for those use cases are different, then it means that my identity information, which will be required in each of those use cases, is going to be duplicatively and redundantly issued in different formats and different models. And that just doesn't make sense when, at the end of the day, all of those use cases sit with state government. So yeah, the idea of continuity, we began to see very clearly that it was lost in not recognizing a foundational layer of identity that then these particular use cases could sit upon.
Yep.
So to come back to another question that you were saying, I would say that identity is the only use case for blockchain. However, the way in which different individuals and organizations will experience identity will be from these particular like subsets of the use case. At the end of the day, the way that I identify myself and the way that my home is identified is an identity use case,
yep,
that just happens to sit with Cook County in a land registry capacity. The way that I identify myself to my education or associate my education credentials with myself as the end user is an identity use case that happens to sit with academic institutions.
So you're like a link in the chain, and these are all things in your life that are little nodes on the chain.
That is exactly what it's like.
Boom.
Exactly.
Got it, Scott. You don't even need me.
Boom. That's as far as I can go. Davis, what'd you say? Seriously, what'd you say? He's speechless.
So, okay. Are you one of those people who, this is just kind of like,
it's not a great
story. Are you one of those people? Are you a blockchain is only a blockchain if it incorporates cryptocurrency people, or are you all on the private ledger train? Where do you fall on that spectrum? Because I know it's such a hot topic.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So we're we sit in the middle of that. So right now the ledger that we have chosen to work with first is a ledger called VerisOne. And VerisOne is a public permissionless ledger.
Yep.
That does not have a token or a cryptocurrency associated with it. So essentially, this network that exists to verify transactions, the issuance of this digital identity that sits on the blockchain, that those nodes that are using their electricity are remunerated in US dollars, not in a cryptocurrency. So we split the difference and say that cryptos, really challenging. Regulatory requirements, treasury management, the way in which taxes, you know, will still need to be defined and will shake out. All of those questions make for some significant challenges around the way that a business or a government could interact with a cryptocurrency designed blockchain. And we don't want that friction point added into our business processes when we pull in those businesses and those government departments into our solution.
I look at this, and I want you to ask the question after this, but the thing that I say this to a lot of founders, and I think this is a good example. Often talk about with any decision when I'm looking at whether it's an investment or it's just like viability, I'm looking at this going, follow the money trail. And whoever is the closer you can get to the money and to the decision maker, the power, the better idea you're going to have with respect to like your viability. So like if the person who makes a decision on your fate is 18 miles away and has nothing to do with what you're doing, best of luck to you. If that person literally like makes decisions based on what you provide them with, then you have a very good chance of controlling that. What I'm getting at with that is the US currency part. When you look at a lot of the crypto pieces, and this is just my own uneducated opinion in this, but when I look at this and I think, who has the most money, who has the most, you know, quote unquote wealth, meaning real estate access tools, most use case, most importance of identity, and the most power. Right now, we're trying to change this, but right now it's old, bald, white men. That's who have it. And they are, there's more than a century, there's multiple centuries, there's a lifetime of support that says they don't like the change, and they don't like the change very quickly. And so when I looked at crypto, I thought volatility could be fun, definitely some things to build on, something to learn from. We definitely want to be innovative and push the boundary, but it's going to be a long, 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 long time before the people who are now the most powerful, wealthy, concentrated wealth are going to be okay with getting away from what they're comfortable with, which is USD. And until we are in that position, if you try to build a business, one that's going to be scaled for the masses like you're building, if you get off of the USD thing, you bring in a whole plethora of problems that you did not sign up to solve, nor do you have any influence in. And that to me is where everyone who says tokens, crypto thing, it's like, gosh, I really hope you do that internally and like figure it out. And you're like ready when the button goes. But until then, the people who control your fate have zero interest in giving up the power that you are essentially creating. Mm-hmm. Does that sound... He's looking at me like, what the hell's wrong with you?
No, I just can't get over what you were saying before, that you actually have a public ledger that can actually use as a US dollar. I mean, how do you, like kind of going off what you're saying, it's really cool if it can work. I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
How do you, so like, in Ethereum or something like that, you actually have a protocol that's run on all these different computers, and it creates an Ethereum, right, when you mine a block. If this is used as a proof of work scheme, which it sounded like it does, how do you, like, who's, if you're creating these US dollar tokens, which I don't know if that's how that works, who's backing that? How do you, like, actually assign a physical US dollar value to that that token? How does that work?
Great question. So I think to answer those specific questions, it would be good to kind of start by taking a step back and talking a little bit about at a macro level, how the model of ledger that we use for identity is a bit different from other ledgers. So broadly, I like to talk about blockchain in terms of three different models of distributed ledgers. You have Bitcoin as a purely transactional model. A transaction is conveyed between party A and party B. Right now, it is a transaction of value around money. And that is publicly written to a ledger. And that is incredibly valuable because there is not a central authority and there is absolute transparency in that record. So that's the first. Then we move on to Ethereum. And so we've watched this evolution now where you essentially have a self-executing if-then statement. So it's like an Excel macro on steroids. Again, we have this public ledger. So you get the benefit of that transparency. But now you get some extra kickers of functionality. When conditions A are met, action B is issued. And that's incredibly valuable as well. Let's put that to the side. And now let's talk about the type of ledger that we at Attest and all of the other peers in our industry are using. And that type of ledger is referred to as a self-sovereign identity ledger. And we like to talk about that language straight out of the gate because the idea that identity will ever be truly self-sovereign. So the idea that I, Jennifer, will be 100% able to own and manage my own identity is a bit of a non-starter because at the end of the day, my identity is built around my interactions with other organizations and the way in which those other organizations then issue some type of credential, verification, audit of our relationship. And so since that's issued with another organization, they indeed are the holder of that identity attribute. And I really do want to kind of underline this because I think an example that's helpful is if self-sovereign identity was truly self-sovereign, then I could have a driver's license issued by the DMV, go out and get 10 high-speed speeding tickets and not allow the DMV to revoke my driver's license, which is not the way that things work and nothing that the DMV would ever tolerate.
I would like that.
Right. Like, yeah, it would be nice. But
that would be fantastic.
Just a couple of problems here and there. So I know I went deep down the rabbit hole on that, but I do think it's interesting to discuss this idea of what does self-sovereign identity really mean? And the way that we think of this at Attest is that it means user-centric. So to the point that you made earlier that you are the hub and all of these identity attributes that you have accumulated throughout your lifetime sit with you as the end user and you have a significantly higher degree of management and more importantly, a significantly higher degree of exposure and transparency and to see when other people really want to call or access or point to those relationships you have. So if we kind of now go into the technology side of how this third model of distributed ledger works, it works completely different than the first two. So again, it's a public permissionless ledger so that anyone can stand up a node, anyone can participate in these transactions. But what's actually being written to the ledger is something that's called a DID or a decentralized ID. And the best way to think about this is it's a meaningless but unique identifier. So if you could imagine that our social security number, which should be unique, actually was meaningless. If it no longer held like the, it should be conveyed with such security and privacy, but rather could be out there because it actually didn't directly say that this number relates to Jennifer.
Yep.
So this did acts to bind my analog Jennifer walking around on the street with digital Jennifer that's now going to be interacting with all of these organizations through this ledger online. And so this DID essentially is associating these claims that are going to be issued by the, you know, governments and organizations as they currently do. They're being associated with this DID, but they're being held off-chain in the end user's wallet. And so there is no sensitive information. There is no PII written to the ledger. And that is so important. I'm just going to say it again for all your listeners, that it doesn't matter if we're talking about a self-sovereign identity model blockchain or the Bitcoin blockchain or Ethereum, you do not write sensitive information to the ledger, because at the end of the day, encryption codes will need to involve, encryption standards rather, mm-hmm. they will be hacked, yep. hashes will be broken, and the ledger will remain immutable.
We're speeding towards that video game that came out a few years ago that you could like hack people while you're walking on the street. John knows the game I'm talking about, but what was that? Yes, Watch Dogs. We were heading towards Watch Dogs. This has been a fascinating conversation, not only a learning conversation. I feel like I just got an engineering degree just by proxy here. Davis, I appreciate you helping me understand anything that's going on in the world. Jennifer, I appreciate what you guys are doing, because I really do think that, like, to your point, it really is like blockchain and the value that we're looking at least right now, is identity. I totally agree with you. So I appreciate all of the stuff you guys are doing to work on it and taking the time to explain this to us mortals here and the rest of you listening. Where do people go to learn more about Attest?
Yeah, please go to our website. It is www.myattestid.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at Attest, @AttestID.
And make sure you're verified, because we want to know who
Absolutely.
The humans are. Everyone's got to be
blue check mark.
Blue check mark. Digital Jennifer and analog Jennifer will be there with a blue check mark. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, you can learn more about the upcoming Technori events, investment opportunities, and check out the blog at technori.com. Download the podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on social @Technori. You can follow me @Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.